This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Chapters 3, The Dursleys Departing, and The Seven Potters. In these chapters, a tiny bit of humanity from Dudley.
Yes. Surprising. Still none from...
Yeah.
I got some questions.
Yeah, there are lots of question marks. And then, our first battle sequence of the book.
I was going to say, it's like basically an action scene at the end of that chapter.
Yeah, so. It's all action, and we did not wait until the end of the school year for it.
Thank goodness. I have many questions about that. Mainly, I'm very concerned about a white owl, but we'll see.
Yes, we will discuss. So, we begin with Chapter 3, The Dursleys Departing. And so, again, last chapter, it was with Harry and sort of recapping some things, but it wasn't direct interaction with the Dursleys because it was, like, at night in his room just trying to, like, you know, organize himself and his thoughts.
Right.
Before leaving. But now we've got the Dursleys on full throttle, and so the chapter begins with Uncle Vernon screaming, "Oi, you!" And it's like 16 years of being addressed thus left Harry in no doubt whom his uncle was calling.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I thought we were going to get an opportunity to just forget these people existed, but we could not be so lucky. So,
yeah. So Harry trods on downstairs. And so in essence, what's going on is Uncle Vernon, Aunt Petunia, and Cousin Dudley have to go into hiding because once the blood magic that Lily imparted on Harry, once he becomes of age, then that will disappear. And there's no protection that the Dursleys have against anyone who would want, such as the Death Eaters, who would want to like torture them for information.
Right. Yeah. And they obviously don't realize what like the enormity of that threat, because there's some really silly conversations that.
Yes, there's some, because Uncle Vernon seems to have been going back and forth, and at first it's like, I've changed my mind, like, this is a plot to get the house.
Yeah, sure. That was pretty funny, and it obviously makes me think about, you know, like, life right now, because he says, our house prices are skyrocketing around here, you just want us out of the way, and then you're going to do a bit of hocus pocus, and before you know it, the deeds will be in your name. Like, and Harry's like, no, give me a freaking break. Like,
yeah, because Harry's like, my godfather gave me a house. Why would I want this one? All the happy memories.
Right. Which, and then he kind of like, they kind of are like, yeah, you're right.
But yeah, I too did immediately go there, because as I was mentioning to you off mic, to put things in perspective about my own frustrations with capitalism and all things, you know, I've been trying to balance my perceptions by watching news pieces about, you know, again, the House of Living crisis in the United Kingdom and the fuel energy crisis and people making the choice between heating and eating. So yeah, immediately when he's like, you know, prices, houses around this area are skyrocketing, and that's true just absolutely everywhere, both in the UK and in the US. Like, in, I think, Denver, there was a teacher who basically couldn't teach in that district anymore because her rent went up 48%.
Oh my gosh, that's exactly what we need to have happen. Drive good teachers out of places.
Drive good teachers out of places and harass the teachers of the year in Kentucky just because they're gay.
I didn't hear about that, thank God. I don't need to.
But yeah, just the house prices soaring, because again, I could go into a whole thing, because, you know, homeownership is the gateway to the middle class. It is the gateway to social economic mobility. And so that's why there's been so much, even before pandemic, just so much talk about the millennials, you know, not having the means to buy a house. But in the UK, in some places, especially near London and like Manchester, it's at a point where, you know, a girl, they were talking to this one like late 20 or early 30 millennial, saying, you know, she's like, I kind of resigned to the fact that I can't buy a house, but I can't, like, it's not even just a, like, home buyers, like renters, you can't get anything. Wow. Without like waiving things or like, you know, putting like a year's worth of deposit. Like, you literally can't even move in some places. And like, not even like totally scrapping like home ownership, just renting.
Yeah. Well, that's really frustrating. And then I guess Uncle Vernon seems to have a valid like argument. If I mean, like
it would be, because like literally, you know, there have been some people, whether they're podcasters or maybe in personal discussions, where it's like, because you think, oh, like, you know, you're going to hiding with people that you don't trust. Like, it's natural that they would be like suspicious or prickly or whatever. But I'm just like, they've had years to try and get used to this world. And at the very least, even when Voldemort returned, and again, when Dumbledore, like, if the Dursleys were receptive, you know, Dumbledore, like, from the minute Voldemort returned at the end of book 4, if the Dursleys were smart, they would have conversations with Dumbledore, and Dumbledore would tell them that this charm is going to end, you know, when he turns 17, you need to like get your affairs in order so that you're ready to move. They didn't have to be just uprooting them. They could have done this, prepared for this years with Uncle Vernon getting a new job and Dudley's school. And like, they could have had years to prepare for this.
Right. Yeah, they could have,
but again, they just have nothing to do with it beyond when Dumbledore threatens bodily harm or, you know, just, or something at the very least very unpleasant.
Right, yeah, otherwise they're just kind of like, I mean, resigned to deal with the situation. And I think it's pretty telling about Vernon, who's, you know, thinks that he deserves the protection of Kingsley Shacklebolt because he's like the protector of the prime minister. So he deserves that level of like care. It's like, who do you think you are, man?
And it's interesting, you know, Harry saying that, you know, of all like wizarding people that he's seen Vernon interact with, he has substantial more, I guess, respect is not the right term, at least confidence in his competency. In Kingsley specifically, because he didn't have it in Arthur, he didn't have it in other people. And it's just interesting that of all people that that Vernon quote unquote trusts, he trusts the Black Wizard.
Yeah, I thought about that too. And I just thought about
that interracial dynamic of you know, that Kingsley can garner, I guess, not, again, it's more intimidation than respect, but you know, Kingsley can make an impression on Vernon when no one else has, except with the exception of maybe Dumbledore.
Yeah. And I wondered if there were any like sort of racist undertones to that on Uncle Vernon's point, thinking, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, because basically looking at Kingsley as a bodyguard.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I kind of got a hint of that. Maybe it was my own interpretation, but
no, I was thinking that. But again, we're both, you know, what is, I forget who's the quote, the same person does not read the same book twice, in, you know, making the reference that both the reader changes, you know, every time they, you know, return to a book and get something different out of it. And a lot of times our perceptions are being whether with racism and feminism, our perceptions are being very much influenced by post-George Floyd, post-Me Too, and all those things.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true.
So, anyway, so they don't get Kingsley. Who they do get is Hestia and Daedalus, or what's his name, Diggles?
Yeah, it's a silly name, and it sounds like he's kind of a silly person. I couldn't get a very... It is a he, right?
Yeah. It is a he. If you remember in book one, Diggles is mentioned as, like, you know, as Harry when he's in the bar, the Leaky Cauldron, for the first time. And Diggles is like, oh, very nice to meet you, Harry Potter. And Harry's like, oh, I saw you in a, like, supermarket. You bowed to me. And Diggles is like, oh, he remembers.
Oh.
So, like.
It's so great Diggles, Harry Potter trivia. I'm going to need you, ear.
Yeah, so Diggles has been around. And I guess I had forgotten that he was, like, a full order member, which is probably why he was not just being a Harry Potter, you know, fanboy. He probably was keeping an eye on him.
Right. Yeah. Well, so that's, they don't have, like, a bad person to protect them. It's just not, you know, I feel like anybody Vernon would probably be, if Kingsley was the person, he'd probably have a problem. I don't feel like...
If he had not seen Kingsley on TV with the Prime Minister.
Right. He's just going to take issue with anything.
Yeah, and he, and then we know Hestia from the Order of the Phoenix. Like, her character isn't developed all that much, and I wish it was.
Yeah, I was going to say, barely remembered that was the person in this chapter.
Mm-hmm. And so, let's see. And, yeah, just more arguing of... Oh, 1 minute, my cat Gyro is crying. Here, let me...
Oh, okay.
Nope, he doesn't want to come in.
Okay, kitties.
The problem is that I've, you know... I've been lazy and been piling up, you know, clean clothes on my desk, which I'm now podcasting in. And that's usually, like, his bed, his warm, cozy bed. So I've just disrupted his whole universe. Aww.
Yes. Yeah. I know how that goes.
So, yeah, there's lots of volleying back and forth. But finally, Dudley is like, Dad, I'm going with these order people.
And Harry knows that, like, if Dudley says that, then everybody else is going to follow, which is interesting.
Yeah, because as Harry's put it, there's no way they're going to leave their little Duddykins.
Right. Ugh. Exactly.
And then, yeah, Daedalus. And good day to you, Harry Potter's relatives.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty... you can just kind of see them in your mind's eye, like, how they're going to react to that, because that's kind of the last thing they want to be associated with is Harry.
Yeah. And Diggles is like... You know how to drive, I take it. Know how to? Of course, I bloody well know how to drive. Very clever of you, sir. Very clever. I personally would be utterly bamboozled by all those buttons and knobs.
That's funny. It's like the Arthur Weasley preoccupation with muggle things.
Yeah, so basically Hestia and Diggles are gonna drive the Dursleys like 10 miles away to disapparate to like a safe location. And the original plan was Mad-Eye was going to come and just side along, apparate Harry, like the same way Dumbledore picked him up in the beginning of last book. But that's not going to happen anymore.
Yeah, they're kind of... people are on to the Harriet Potter escape plan. So they're kind of coming up with alternate plans, which we'll get to in a little bit.
And then as it's time to depart, we get, again, what was your response to, like, Dudley being like, why isn't Harry coming with us?
You know, his reaction is quite interesting through this. Obviously, Dudley has made an impression and kind of, I forget the last time we kind of had a scene with Dudley and Harry is, I believe, when he saved him from the Dementors. Or is there another one?
So, yeah, the big one, of course, is when, at the beginning of the fifth book, when Harry saves Dudley. But obviously, there was a brief interaction in the beginning of the sixth book when, you know, Dudley is being, you know, bamboozled by Dumbledore. And it's and he's present when Dumbledore is saying, like, you didn't take care of Harry like I told you. The only thing that can be said is that he's not a spoiled little brat like your son.
Yeah, and that felt like it was more about, like, the parents than it was Dudley, kind of. But so it's just interesting that obviously this has kind of gelled in his mind and the interaction with the Dementors.
Yep. And then even Harry is thinking back to the teacup that had been left outside his door. And he's like, maybe it wasn't Voodoo Trap. Maybe Dudley was trying to be nice.
Yeah. Interesting. And kind of, I don't get the impression that he was trying to like booby trap him. I wouldn't call their relationship like, far as I can tell, they're not going to be like besties after this, but he definitely is less of a bully than when he was first introduced, his interactions with Harry at this point.
Yeah. And there's a point where, they think I'm a waste of space, actually, but I'm used to, I don't think you're a waste of space.
Which is quite, you can only imagine, Petunia's face. And her reaction is so obnoxious. But
yeah, if Harry had not seen Dudley's lip moved, he might not have believed it.
Right.
So it's just the sense of, obviously it's very obvious and Dudley makes mention of it, like, you saved my life. But I think also what Dumbledore said about indirectly... insulting Dudley in presuming that you're a spoiled brat, I think that also probably had an impression. And I think Dudley is obviously not fully there, but is getting to a point of realizing that his parents' perceptions of Harry are distorted.
I think it's interesting, with kids and, they can kind of be exactly like their parents or they can kind of take an alternate path. And it's kind of makes you wonder if Dudley's maybe going to, kind of deviate from what he grew up with and maybe be less of a pretentious jerk.
Yeah, and Aunt Petunia's reaction to this is she's hugging and she's like, so sweet, Dudley, such a lovely boy, saying thank you. And again, and it's, played for laughs that, like, Hestia's like, he didn't say thank you. All he said was that Harry's not a waste of space. And Harry's like, yeah, but coming from Dudley, that's like, I love you. And I think, and again, it's played for laughs and it's rude and obnoxious, but I think it is telling because I think Petunia having such a display like that, I think she is genuinely proud of Dudley, even something so minuscule, because right then and there, Dudley is evolving to a place of accepting the magical world in a way that she hasn't done in her entire life.
She never got
to a point where she could have like a degree of acceptance and a peaceful relationship with her sister. And so she's seeing that Dudley is ultimately a better person than she is. That's kind of my take on it.
Yeah, and I kind of wondered if she kind of felt like a bit of relief in that moment that there might have been like a kernel of something there that she really wanted it, but to kind of express that, but it has been so oppressed by Uncle Vernon that she, like, again, with this kind of idea that Dudley kind of opens the door because they put him on such a pedestal for some reason, who knows why, other than he's their offspring, I guess, that maybe she just kind of was like, oh, if he's going to be accepting of this, maybe I can kind of like, because the thing that I was thinking about the whole time I'm reading this is what Dumbledore said to her the last time they were together. I don't remember the exact phrasing, but obviously it shook her up and it was not addressed. So I'm like, what the hell? But
yeah, well, I think even in the very first book, when we those early chapters, I divulged my own theory about, again, why Petunia especially puts her son on a pedestal, because I think she was left in a position where she didn't feel special, she didn't feel unique or valued in comparison to her sister's magical powers. And so I think she's overcompensating. It's like, my parents never, again, we don't know the level of how good or how badly, not that they were mean, but we don't know how good or badly that Harry's Muggle grandparents were able to treat the sisters, fairly or have a balanced relationship with each of them. Like, we don't know exactly how well or how poorly they did that. And right. so I think for Petunia, putting her son on a pedestal is her compensating for the fact that I never felt loved because Lily got all the love because she was magical.
Yeah. So interesting. Interesting. Yeah.
And then also something, as you said, like the kernel of what could have been with Petunia had it not been for Vernon. Because I definitely lean into that headcanon as well, because I think she met and married Vernon at a time where her bitterness towards magic and her sister was at its absolute highest. And there's yeah. and there's always, I personally believe, not that she's not an unpleasant person, and I don't want to, you know, diminish her own, you know, role in abusing Harry just because she's a woman.
Right, yeah.
You know, but I tend to have the feeling that if she had married someone different than Vernon, then again, it would have been later than life, then clearly Dudley is exhibiting, but she would have found a level of peace and tolerance and reconciliation with the fact that there is this magical world and, you know, and she's not part of it.
Yeah. I think Vernon is the most toxic one in this situation. And I think that Petunia, while she is, you know, like you said, was definitely not doing anything to help Harry. She can be easily kind of swayed, like you kind of mentioned.
So yeah, beyond our psychoanalysis, but yeah, as you said, definitely Uncle Vernon is the most toxic one.
Yeah, he's not cool, but thankfully we are going to leave him behind. I don't know about forever or not.
Yep, and so when Dudley leaves, he shakes Harry's hand. And that's so nice.
Pretty big for Dudley, or Big D, as Harry called him.
Yeah, don't know. See you, Harry. Yeah, said Harry. Maybe. Take care, Big D. Dudley nearly smiled, then lumbered from the room.
I can't ask a lot of questions, because I don't know what happens here, but we'll see. Mm-hmm.
And then Aunt Petunia, whose face had been buried in her handkerchief, looked around at the sound. She did not seem to have expected to find herself alone with Harry. Hastily stowing her wet handkerchief into her pocket, she said, "Well, goodbye," and marched towards the door without looking at him. "Goodbye," said Harry. She stopped and looked back. For a moment, Harry had the strangest feeling. She wanted to say something to him. She had given him an odd, tremulous look and seemed to titter on the edge of speech. But then, with a little jerk of her head, she bustled out of the room after her husband and son.
Something's still there.
Yeah, so yeah, even after, you know, again, making such a spectacle of herself in regards to Dudley, even with Dudley doing it, she can't do it.
Yeah.
She can't say anything nice.
Petunia, get it together, lady. But
yep. And then we move on to chapter 4, The Seven Potters. And we've got Harry all by himself now at number 4 Privet Drive, and he picks up Hedwig's cage, and he's like, you know, one last look at the place, and he's telling Hedwig, like, "Don't you want to take a last look? See, that's Dudley puked on that doormat after I saved him from the Dementors."
Right. I feel like he's really reaching for some of these quote-unquote happy memories, but yeah. it also is a good reminder at this point in the story of kind of some of the things that have happened in the previous books.
Yeah, and last summer, Dumbledore walked through that front door. And,
oh, man.
Yep, and he's going around, "And under here is where I used to sleep. You never knew me then. Blimey, it's small, I'd forgotten."
Sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so... So basically, we've got the cavalry shows up in the back garden.
Yeah, everybody's here. The gang's all here.
We've got Kingsley. We've got Mad-Eye. We've got Mundungans. We've got Bill and Fleur, Ron, Hermione, the twins.
Yeah,
Tonks. Remus. Hagrid.
Hagrid, very important.
Very important.
Yes. Mundungus and Fletcher.
Yeah, he's the one that... you thought his necklace got into Katie Bell's hands, like, because Harry was choking him for stealing Sirius's stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
He's like the quote-unquote ex... He's like the crook you keep around so you can get into the underworld.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. And Kingsley is there, which I think you had mentioned, which he was supposed to be with the Prime Minister, but
yeah, now well, they're he's like, away. They're like, Kingsley, he can get along with me for one night. And then right after, it's like, Harry, guess what? Said Tonks from her perch on top of the washing machine, and she wiggled her left hand at him, a ring glittering there.
Which we already knew because of all the drama with Voldemort, but Harry did not know. And the cozy catch-up is like my favorite new phrase that I just learned. The cozy catch-up, we'll have to save that for later. I'm going to save that at work. Let's save the cozy catch-up for later.
I have taken to Snape's favorite insult of Dunderhead.
Dunderhead, that's a good one.
That's a good one because I have a book like, you know, like specifically like weird words from the 16th to 600 to year 1600, 1800, and I was going through the D's and there was Dunderhead there and I was like, I know that one.
There you go.
Yeah, Snape is so that's archaic. Fun.
I don't love him. I was going to say God love him, but I don't, so.
So, in essence, what has happened is things cannot be as easy as simply Mad-Eye side-apparating Harry out of there because Pious Thickness, who we know from Voldemort's drama, has been placed under the Imperius Curse. So he, in essence, they're watching all the magic happening at the house and, you know, want any excuse to possibly come and make trouble for Harry.
Yeah.
So that the only thing that they can do is the same way in which he left, you know, beginning of Order of the Phoenix, is to use a mode of transportation that does not immediately require magic. So, therefore, brooms, thestrals, and a magical motorcycle.
Which was Sirius's, but now it's Hagrid's, is that right?
Yeah, because Sirius never got it back, because this is the same motorcycle that... that Hagrid used to deliver baby Harry.
Aww. What a full circle moment we're going to have here in a minute.
Yep. And then, so in essence, once they leave, like, that's it. Even though he's not technically 17, once they leave, it's the intention of you're never going to live with your aunt and uncle again. And that's, so when you leave the house, the charm is going to break.
Because it's his home, I guess.
Yeah, it's directly the sense of living together with this blood relative.
Okay.
With this blood relative, which is, you know.
Interesting.
And so they placed a lot of false trails and false leads of when Harry was going to leave. As we know, that failed miserably.
Right. Yeah. Whoops.
Yeah. So what they're going to do to make things as confusing as possible is they're going to use Polyjuice Potion and have six other decoys. What'd you think of this?
So all I could think about was Hermione, and she like kept her little cat fur or whatever for a little bit. And I'm like, is that going to, I mean, granted she was like not super well seasoned wizard or witch as she is now. But very interesting plan. Honestly, all I could think about is I wonder what this looks like in the movie. So I'm sure I'll find out.
Yeah. So we've got Polyjuice Potion, and Harry originally tries to protest, being like, you know, you can't do this. You know, it's dangerous. Blah blah blah. And Moody's like, we're gonna do this the easy way or the hard way.
Right.
If we have to pin you down.
Right. And cut your hair and like everybody drink the hair or whatever. I mean, I know the Polyjuice Potion. So yeah. So they do it basically.
Yeah. So they do it. And so we get some hair from Harry, drops in the potion, and the potion turns gold. But kind of like Felix Felice's, because as we know from our previous you know, experiences with Polyjuice, like the potion reacts to whatever person you're trying to impersonate. And Hermione's like, oh, you look so much more tastier than like Goyle did.
Gross. Yeah, that's funny. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, you know what I mean. Goyle's potion looked like bogeys.
Ugh, gross. And then we had the fake Potters to line up. So everybody, who is it? Moody, you know, he's just delivering it. Ron, Hermione, Fred, George, and Fleur.
Yeah. Yeah, and each Potter decoy has their own, like, guard. So, like...
Yes.
So, Tonks is with Ron. Tonks is with Ron. Kingsley is with Hermione. Hagrid is with real Harry. Bill is with Fleur. Remus is with, like, Fred or George. And Mad-Eye is with Mundungus.
Okay. All right. Well... Well, they all turn into Harry, and Fleur is not a fan. But they talk about the hair shrinking. I thought that was kind of funny.
Mm-hmm. Bah, Bill, don't look at me. I'm hideous.
Dang. I was like, poor Harry. He's like, thanks, you know?
Yeah, and Hermione's just like, Harry, your eyesight is so awful.
And I thought about, I was like, well, like, the poor guy, he can't help it. And then Ron said, I knew Jenny was lying about that tattoo.
Mm-hmm. And Fred and George is like, yeah, think of us. What if something goes wrong and we're stuck as a scrawny little speckled git forever?
And the kindness, not very kind to poor Harry, who's just like, did not ask for this, really.
Yeah. And they're trying to do a little bit of not just being decoys, but kind of setting the idea of there are different modes of transportation so that people will immediately presume that the real Harry is on a broom because he's good at flying with a broom.
Right.
So purposely, they're not putting real Harry on a broom with someone. They're putting him on the sidecar with Hagrid on the motorbike.
Which he kind of eventually is like, this is like really dangerous. Like, I don't know how I feel about all of this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, for reasons we will find out, it's not like a chill ride back. It's pretty intense. So.
Yeah. And then So, let's see. Is that Sirius's bike? The very same, said Hagrid, beaming down. And the last time you were on it, I could fit you in one hand.
Harry cannot help but feel a little humiliated. I was kind of like, why?
I don't think he's humiliated. I wish Harry the Rider would have made some little point of, oh, that's very cute, and then go to the fact that he was embarrassed by being on the sidecar.
Oh, yeah. But his initial... Why? Oh, that as he got into the sidecar. Oh, poor guy. Anyway, yeah, that, I agree.
Yep. And so then they kick off, and who is to show up but 30 Death Eaters in the air?
Of course.
And it's just complete and utter chaos.
It is till the end of the chapter. It's just, like you said, like an action scene right off the jump.
And we get our first casualty.
So she's really gone, Hedwig. Anyway.
Well, because she's hit with the killing curse. So, and even if she hadn't been, there's the point in the action sequence where, in trying to deter the Death Eaters, there's a point where he gets on the bike and he blows up the sidecar.
Yes.
So she gets. So even if she wasn't dead, Harry blew her up to smithereens.
Well, okay. I hate that.
Yeah. I was very put off. It's like, of all the people, not even people, why?
Right. It's a freaking owl. Like, all she does is deliver messages
and
give Harry
some. Some analysis like to think of it as a marker of the loss of Harry's innocence. And I'm just like, bullshit.
Interesting. Okay. I don't know how I feel about that one yet.
And the thing is, and again, all the decoys have cages with little, like, plushy owls in them. And it's like, why? Why did we need to go have that extra step anyway? Couldn't you just release Hedwig, like, before the whole thing went down? You know she's going to find her way back later.
That's a great question. Why did they not just let her
fly?
Well,
they didn't let, if they were going to keep her with them, she couldn't fly because she's going to fly with the real Harry.
Okay.
So she's going to give him away. But the thing is she just should not have been there at all. They should have, like, told Harry, like, release her the day before.
Yeah.
Release her the day before so that she'll be at the Burrow or wherever she knows to go.
Well, I don't love this. For some reason, I was like, there's got to be a way. She's got to be like, I knew she died in this, but I did not know this soon.
Thanks to your no good 10-year-old niece.
Thanks to poor Molly. But yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't you know people at podcasts, Molly? It's not all about you.
Yeah, you're only, I think she told me that when she was like 8 or something, so that's pretty funny. Yeah, well, now I know. So that one's spoiled and done for me. R.I.P. Hedwig.
R.I.P. Hedwig. And then we lose, obviously, pales in comparison to losing Hedwig, but I always get a twinge of, you know, the Firebolt, you know, is lost forever.
And yeah.
And the Firebolt was, you know, the birthday present from Sirius, so, like, one of the last things. Well, again, he has all of Grimmauld Place, but, you know, a very important sentimental object from and his also, godfather.
Yeah, it's symbolic, like, to his, you know, kind of gaining confidence and being a bunch of things.
Yeah, and it's just the weirdest thing of, you know, thinking about this, you know, action sequence. Like, if it were me, like, again, the way it shows, like, the sidecar, you know, detaching from the motorbike, and he's literally like he can't make it fly, but he's just like, you know, levitating it slightly. Like, at that point, you just take the Firebolt and you just go with the Firebolt, and you do what you
need. Exactly. Yeah, but I don't know. This is just chaos. I got lost in the chaos in here.
Yes, and so this motorbike, during all this action, has a lot of features where Hagrid presses a button and a brick wall just appears. Just materializes and squishes one of the Death Eaters, and then he pummels to the ground.
That was pretty cool, and it also, like, shoots dragon fire, too, yeah, right?
It shoots dragon fire.
That's pretty badass.
That is pretty badass. And then, yeah, dragon fire, and then, what else does it do? I forget, but, yeah, just Death Eaters chasing them, and then Hagrid brings out his pink umbrella, which, as we know, has his old wand, and he tries to fix the car, and that just, it sparks again the sidecar detaching.
Right. And then, oh, I'm trying to make sure I don't jump ahead. Oh, okay, I don't think I'm jumping too far ahead. And then he kind of just drops. Hagrid
Yeah,
does.
he just starts dropping until Hagrid, you know, hauls him by the back of his robes and hoists him. You know, onto the motorcycle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then, so yeah, they're going on the motorbike. And, you know, Harry is, at this point, is doing, like, stunning spells. You know, a lot of different defensive things. But then when he sees one of the quote-unquote Death Eaters, he realizes it's the blank face of Stan Shunpike. And so Harry realizes that, oh, Stan is under the Imperious curse, he's not responsible for his actions. So because of that, Harry goes towards, like, just taking his wand away and not, because, you know, if you were to stun someone, they just fall to the ground and plummet to their death.
Right.
So he, because obviously he feels bad for Stan, he just goes with Expelliarmus, and then immediately it's like, that's him, it's him, it's the real one.
Because he gave himself away. Like, I mean, that's, he's obviously, I feel like Voldemort obviously knew the innocent victim he was going to try to help assist. And I feel like out of all the Harrys, the real Harry is the only one that's probably going to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how had he known? He gazed around, apparently empty darkness. Where were they? And then, what do we got? And then Voldemort's just flying like smoke on the wind without a broomstick or a thestral.
What in the world?
So we've got Voldemort, like, doing... When Kevin and Amanda were reading this, got to this point, Kevin was just like, so how's he doing? Is he like spread eagle like Jesus? Is he like Superman with his fist in front of him? Like, how is he flying?
Well, I imagined like him on a hoverboard, because I was like, how is this working? So, very strange.
Yeah, his snake-like face gleaming out of blackness, white fingers raised his wand, and... Yep. And so, yeah, we've got Voldemort on our tail now. And then, during all this, you know, jets of green light shot past them, and another hooded figure on a broomstick was feet from him, and Hagrid just launches his hooves off the bike onto the Death Eater, onto the broom, and they start going down.
Yeah, I know, because I couldn't read the next chapter, and I really need to know what happens to Hagrid. So,
yeah, barely, yep, and then we still got Voldemort, and then Harry realizes that his wand starts doing its own thing.
Okay, let me think about this for a second. Voldemort isn't using his own wand, though, right?
That's the thing. He purposely took Lucius Malfoy's wand because he was trying to circumvent the fact that their wands share a wand card and it does that crazy shit. So it's right. The sense of, why is there more crazy shit?
Right.
Yeah, because Harry's like, Harry felt it drag his hand around like some great magnet, saw a spurt of gold fire through his half-closed eyelids, heard a crack and a scream of fury. The remaining Death Eater yelled. Voldemort screamed no. Somehow Harry found his nose an inch from the dragon fire button, and he pushed it with his wand free hand, and the bike shot more flames into the air.
I don't even know.
Yeah, and then Hagrid's like, Asio Hagrid, the motorbike, sped up, face level, Harry's. And basically, Harry crashes into a muddy pond.
Yeah, and we don't know what happened to Hagrid yet, so.
Yeah, and right really before, he hears Voldemort scream, like, your wand, Slughorn, give me your wand. So, like, you know, Voldemort's thinking, like, something is still not right, I need a different wand.
Yeah. Yeah, and then that was it. That's for me. That was it.
And that was it. That was our first battle sequence.
I'm guessing there are going to be many more.
Indeed. So, how do you feel about such action in the first few chapters? Definitely a departure from our typical Harry Potter format.
Yeah, less like messing around and getting on the train and flying in a tree and all the other things that have happened. And, you know, it's, I appreciate that aspect. I don't appreciate that Hedwig's dead. And I also don't appreciate that I don't know what happened to Hagrid yet. So, those parts are not my favorite, but it definitely starts with a bang. So
with a bang. I don't know. Yes. Alrighty then. So, shall we start our exercises with Gothic Geek Out?
Yes.
So, it took me a little bit this time, but yes, please share.
Well, it did me too, and I just probably went with a really, I'm not even going to say that. Just the presence, I was going to say the presence of death and the Death Eaters and the Dementors. I feel like a little bit of that kind of was more in the action realm than it really was the Gothic realm.
Right.
But it's still like a, you know, an entity that is, I mean, they're Death Eaters. I mean, that's a pretty hardcore presence. But it really kind of, I feel like this is kind of my, I don't feel very solid in my Gothic Geek Out this week because it felt more action sequence than it really did Gothic. So I'm curious what yours was.
Mine was, and I was kind of proud of myself, is the notion of dead animals. You know, going back to, you know, death, RIP Hedwig.
Yeah.
Because as we've read plenty of Gothic literature, there's plenty of times and, you know, it's a sort of a device where, whether it's supernatural or, you know, otherwise, the idea of using of a protagonist in a Gothic-y sort of novel, seeing a dead animal as a sort of warning.
Okay, yeah.
And, or rather in, like, thriller, like, with the stalker or whatever, like, you know, I thought of The Historian when, you know, the guy's cat gets killed.
See, I block these things out because, like, I've killed people all day, but animals, that's where I can't, even though I know this book I'm currently reading about a bunch of rabbits are about to die, but anyway.
Yeah, so, and especially I think a lot of times, dead birds especially have been used to, you know, try to intimidate people, like with dead birds and leaving them on their porch and things like that, both within Gothic thriller stuff and outside. And if anything, it made me think of, so apparently there was a big vulture problem, like near where I live. And yeah, there's been a lot of them. And so they were roosting in like the outside seating area of like the club, of like the clubhouse where that's where I do book my book club brunches. I've never seen them there, but apparently they were like roosting there. They were like spending so much money on like cleaning up the poop and the property damage that all these like vultures were doing. And so what they did to try and get rid of them, you know, obviously not wanting to exterminate, you know, all of them, apparently what you have to do and what the wildlife agency, whoever they consulted, like to get rid of these vultures, they took one of the vultures, killed it, and hung it up, you know, to deter the others. But the thing was, they were dumb and didn't tell people they were doing this. And so people saw this dead vulture hanging from the ceiling, and naturally everyone was outraged and upset, and no one had the sense to put in the newsletter or put in the neighborhood email, "We've got a vulture problem. This is what we're doing at the advisement of the wildlife agency," or whatever. And yeah, so people like literally thought someone was being like a crazy like serial killer, like hanging a vulture by the rafters.
Yeah, that's pretty messed up. Oh my god, like that's a horror novel in and of itself right there. So there you go, Amy. You can write about that in some capacity. That's very, I did not know that is what happened. But birds, I was trying to think of a story. I mean, trying to think of a story where that symbolism was used.
And I think, you know, and using dead animals as a form of intimidation, it's especially typically unsettling with birds because there's a sense of they can fly, they can like, you know, they can escape in ways that, you know, we can't, and it's very, you know, typically very difficult for us to catch them. So the fact that a bird is dead and then it shows up on your front porch and be like, "You cannot escape, we will find you and kill you."
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's, it made me think of a story of some politician like sending somebody a dead fish or something. I don't know. There's all kinds of, like you said, intimidation that makes me think of mafia stuff too. So,
or again, Godfather, horse head in the bed.
Oh, yeah. God. You know, just intimidate people with your words, not with our lovely animal friends. That's my advice for the day.
I don't know if they were worried about like someone tracking Hedwig or like, because even Moody says, like, you know, even though this is the story we leaked that you're going to move on a separate day, Voldemort would be stupid to not have people monitoring the skies in the area. So maybe they just, so again, I guess the question is, like, how diligent would they have been? Like, if Hedwig had just been released on her own, would a Death Eater have just picked her off?
Probably, unfortunately. So, well, that's a really good one. That was a good gothic one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, because dead animals, they always show up at some point. And then of course always when if it's a type of gothic thriller or whatever where there's like a serial killer, like always the kid who's like has problems, the shorthand to show that he's a psychopath is that they like to kill animals.
When we talked to my favorite gothic book that we read, whose name I can't even think about, I can see the cover in, oh shoot, what was that? The one with the roses, the black roses.
Horrid.
I knew it had an H. But one of the scenes in there that I don't want to talk about, she said what was like the worst thing some kid could do. And that's what she put in the book. It was killing cats. So it was as disturbing for her to write, the author said, as the reader to read. But
yeah, I remember, even forget which serial killer it was, but like some murderer history where like as a kid he had beheaded a swan, and it's like, ugh.
Oh man, I don't know who that was. They're weird with that shit.
Yeah, so anyway, that's all I could come up with. Dead birds.
That's good. I think that's excellent.
Alrighty then, and then we move on to our next exercise, which is Tarot of the Day. And the card I picked at random was the Ten of Swords.
All right.
Which is a very bad card.
Oh, okay.
Ten of Swords is a super bad card. Like, the traditional image of the Ten of Swords is a guy laying flat on his stomach with 10 swords in his back.
Okay, that's the card. Okay.
Okay, so the Ten of Swords makes a painful yet inevitable ending, for it marks a painful ending. For example, a relationship may come to an abrupt end, your job may be cut, or a contract is broken. It is as if this ending has come out of the blue and rocked your world. You can have never expected it, but now it has happened, cutting to the core and leaving you feeling as if the world has crumbled in around you. You are grieving the pain of this shocking loss and wonder if you will ever love or find work or trust again.
How? That is bad. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, because traditionally, the Ten of Cups and the Ten of Pentacles, and I think by extension, the Ten of Wands, like, again, the tens are supposed to symbolize culmination, and for all the other suits, wands, cups, pentacles, that's a very positive notion in their respective categories of, like, cups with emotions, you know, pentacles with money, but no, Ten of Swords is just... it's just just shitty all around.
Yeah. Relating it to the story, of course, Hedwig, R.I.P. Do we know if the Dursleys make it out alive or not? I don't know. But could they be headed toward, like, a Ten of Swords ending? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yes, they could. So obviously Hedwig is the best one in terms of how, like, shocking it is. When the Ten of Swords appears in a tarot reading, you may be the victim of another person's betrayal or deceit. You feel as if you have been stabbed in the back and are reeling from someone else's actions. Your partner may have cheated on you, a colleague may spread nasty rumors about you, or a family member has betrayed your trust. The pain inflicted runs deep, not because what they have done is hurtful, but because you know deep down that this marks the end of your relationship as you know it. So, yeah, even though there isn't a direct betrayal, it is the sense of, the relationship as we know it with the Dursleys, you know, coming to an end. And the fact that, like the Ten of Swords, it is not a happy ending. It's just a bunch of, with the small exception of Dudley, but with Aunt Petunia and Uncle Vernon, they're just like, you know, we hate you. Like, the only thing they did is, like, and it wasn't even for Harry, it was more for them, for their own conscience. It's like, we hate this kid with a passion, but we're just not willing to directly reject, you know, taking care of him and enacting this blood pact because we don't want to feel guilty if he dies.
Right. Yeah.
It's not about Harry. It's about, again, their sense of, you know. In this way, Petunia is a lot like Snape in terms of Snape being an asshole, but, you know, trying to throughout the years keep tabs on Harry, making sure he's not doing anything too stupid. In that way, Snape and Petunia are quite alike. It's like, I hate this kid's guts, I'm just not willing to let them die.
Yeah, and Snape's got a lot of questions that I need answered, but I will find out later.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on Ten of Swords?
I mean, man, that card really sucks. That's what I would say. No, I mean, like, I guess you could talk about, like, you know, Voldemort was deceived barely by their little plan.
Deceived, and then unexpected things didn't end well for Voldemort because he was so sure just changing the wands would fix everything.
Right. Yeah.
But it didn't. And so for him, it's this sense of betrayal of, like, why is this information? Why am I operating with insufficient or incomplete information?
Right. Like, yeah. Oh, gosh. He's going to choose somebody else for that, probably.
Yes. But who?
Probably Lucius. Because he was using Lucius's wand, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's probably like, oh, you probably, like, enchanted this. I'm just hypothesizing.
Yeah, like, you booby-trapped your own wand.
Yeah. You're really a fan of Potter, so who knows? We'll find out. I'll find out, as I always say.
And then the Org Black Boon Astrology card that I picked at random was the card for the 8th house, which, because you see it, and it has a little subtitle, Ending/Beginnings. And it has a skull on it.
A lot of my stuff is in the 8th house, I think.
Oh, is it? Yeah, I don't pay enough attention. I need to study that stuff more seriously. This is where it all goes dark and becomes mysterious. In astrology, the eighth house represents the long, dark night before light comes, when a new dawn is on its way, but you need to grapple with the darkness and the unknown a while longer. Traditionally, the eighth house is about sex, death, psychic powers, control, and material things such as money and inheritance, but such things you will end up owning, or at least partly. It also represents the time of year when Halloween, or Samhain, takes place, involves all dark, gothic things associated with it. When the eighth house card turns up in a spread, the meaning is clear. You're in a period of great transformation. Your matter in question may seem like a life or death issue, which, for Harry, it very much is life and death, and it's again going leaning into the mysterious factor, because Harry does not understand what's going on with his wand.
Right. He, for some reason, it's not. I don't know what it's doing, but it's not doing what it's supposed to do.
Yep. Something that has been in your life for a long time crumbles like a tower. Hedwig.
Oh, yuck.
Hedwig has been around since book one. She was Hagrid's first birthday present to him.
I didn't have the same reaction as I did when Dumbledore died, but I was still... That's still pretty upsetting, especially now that I know she's for sure dead. So,
yeah, sex and death are major issues of the eighth house, beginnings and the end. This card means serious business. The eighth house shows what a relationship will bring after a commitment is made to a partnership represented by the preceding seventh house. If love is your question, it is a deep, transforming love. You may find yourself sexually irresistible. I'm sure that fanfic is out there between Harry and Voldemort, but...
Ugh. Like a snake thing? Okay. What a...
Snake fetish?
I'm not going to read it. That's what I'll say. Sorry, everybody. Good for you. But, yeah.
Yeah, that was decidedly not the subject matter of the 300,000-word fanfic I read this weekend.
Okay. I mean, no judgment. Not for me. That's what I would say.
Yep. Yeah, so, yeah, just endings, beginnings, just all things. Darkness, death.
Death, just darkness.
Death, sucked. Darkness, Death Eaters.
Death Voldemort, Eaters.
It's all blur now.
Yeah, and kind of the, kind of just the residing in the darkness. I mean, there's not really a lot of positive that happens. I guess Harry seeing his friends was kind of a positive thing, but... It feels very serious. I guess the most happy thing that we could talk about was Lupin and Tonks' engagement. But beyond that, it's pretty kind of... We're not really headed into like a time of sun and light and love, it feels like.
No, we're not.
We've got a lot of eighth house energy here.
Yes, if only there was time for Harry and Dudley to go on a little, like, retreat and go to one of those, like, campsites where they do, like, trust exercises.
There we go. That would be beautiful. That would be lovely.
That would be lovely. But sadly, that is not to be. And so now we move on to what we would like it to be, or possibly with fan fiction time.
Yes. So we were just talking about Dudley, and my thought was, what if he did not have that reaction? What if he was still like an ass? Like, he went through school, he went through the Dementor thing, and instead of being like humbled by that situation, he was just like more angry.
That is certainly very possible, and as we know, that is exactly the route that Petunia took, so... You know, I guess it's the question of, again, we don't know very much. We know that it was contentious. We don't know any specific, you know, details about Lily with Petunia in the way we know with, with James Potter and his friends. So I guess there's a sense of, you know, how are the dynamics different between Harry and Dudley to allow for a possible type of healing, whereas with Petunia and Lily, it did not.
Yeah, I guess we don't really know if there was an opportunity for Lily to save Petunia or something like that, do we? I don't.
No. You know, no, we don't. And I guess it's a sense of, you know, in the dynamics with Harry and Dudley, it's his parents who are steering this hatred, you know, of Harry and magical stuff. Whereas in, again, as I was saying, in terms of why Petunia is the way she is, we don't know how well that the, how well the grandparents were able to handle Petunia and Lily in a way of treating them equally. But I think it's the biggest sense that, you know, Petunia, she is the source of, you know, being really frustrated and angry and, and resentful. So it was never going to happen for her because she was the source, whereas Dudley is not the source of, you know, the disdain for magic. So that left room for Dudley to consider other interpretations.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, also, he could have just, you know, gone with the flow and not really thought about it. You know, again, you like to think that with most people, if you have a near-death experience, that puts things into perspective. And clearly, Dudley did that. But certainly, I'm sure there are other people where it's like, I had a death experience and I learned nothing.
Yeah, I mean, if maybe he... I mean, that also makes me think, like, would there have been a possibility of Dudley's, like, sabotaging? Could he have even been able to, like, sabotage this plan?
To escape? Oh, yeah, because it's like, because in a way, what Dudley is doing is, you know, if we want to be really, like, cynical about it and not seeing the error of his ways or the errors of his parents' ways, for him, we could interpret it as maybe a type of radical acceptance that he typically wouldn't have, but he understands how dangerous the situation is. So he's forcing himself into a level of tolerance that he typically wouldn't if, like, their sense of safety wasn't on the line.
Yeah. 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 I don't know. Dudley was my focus of question this go around, because I think that pivot in a character that for so long has just been so, like,
two-dimensional
is interesting, and I don't know if we'll see him again or not, but that's the best I could do this week. What about you?
I had two I thought of, which number one, what if Hedwig didn't die?
Oh, then everybody would be happy.
Yeah,
I would be happy.
What if instead of seeing Hedwig as a liability that release her and she claws out a Death Eater's eyes?
She would have. For Harry, I mean, she was pretty protective of him. Or they could have... I feel like that was a missed opportunity to use her. Well, here's where my train of thought is. Like, I was initially going to say it could have been a way to, like, get some news somewhere or something. Like, use her in some capacity. But she could have been intercepted, possibly. I mean, that's... Mm-hmm. She was the only snowy owl that was around that we knew of.
Yeah,
right?
that's because that's another thing, because it is pointed out several times that Hedwig is very noticeable and isn't a breed that is typical for that area in England. And even to the point that when Harry's communicating with Sirius earlier in the books, when Sirius is on the run, he tells Harry, keep switching owls because Hedwig is too noticeable.
Yeah. So it might have not. I mean, she kind of was, I feel like we had to, a decision was made to end her life. And it was going to happen somehow. They were going to find a way. I mean, this was kind of accidental, but if they would have released her earlier, it would have been like.
Well, yeah, only thing, maybe, again, because there's a sense of Hedwig could give the real Harry the way, but Harry could have instructed her, I want you to stay with Ron.
Yeah.
I want you to stay with Hermione. I want you. But Harry wouldn't do that because he would be putting a target on someone else's back.
They could have, like, could she have, like, rolled around in some dirt and, like, covered up her feathers and been, like, looked like a barn owl or something?
I'm just a basic barn owl bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. That would have been great. That is, you know what?
I'm just thinking of Hedwig in, like, cameo with a little hat.
That would have been adorable. But could they have changed her temporarily. I mean, Hermione changed like to a beetle or something a little less suspicious.
Yeah. Could they have changed her shape? Possibly. But there was also the sense of, as they found out, just in trying to get Harry, they were completely in a pinch where they could not perform magic in the house.
Okay. Well, shoot.
Only thing maybe is give Hedwig to the Dursleys and have Dudley take Hedwig.
Whew. I mean, talk about cruelty to the animals. I feel like
after what Dudley says, I would think Dudley would have done it.
Yeah. Yeah. That would have been, I need to mull over how I feel about that. But
yeah.
Well.
But yeah, but she shouldn't have died, and she should have still been there for Harry.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Another what if I think of is chapter 3 ends with Aunt Petunia about to say something beyond just goodbye to Harry, but she restrains herself and just leaves. So what if she had said something? What would you envision her saying?
Whatever the hell Dumbledore said to her, like, that scared the shit out of her, last time. You know, because he says something that she is kind of like falls in line pretty quick.
Yeah, remember my last Petunia.
Yeah. Maybe she would have been like, by the way, whatever. Because that's what I thought it was going to be. I'm like, maybe here's the thing. Again, I don't know if we'll see her again. So hopefully I get to know what that thing was, because it obviously affected her in a way that that was noticeable and notable. So,
or again, if in my own universe, if she had been prompted by Dudley being able to offer an olive branch, again, not that they're going to be best buddies afterwards or reconcile really, it would have been nice. I would have liked her to say something like, I'm sorry I couldn't rise above my resentments towards my sister, or something of that nature. Yeah. Not that she would be committed or in any way. I would expect her to try and rectify her character flaws, but at least just say, I'm sorry that I am so damaged that I made your life hell.
Yeah. Or she could have been like, I'm sorry my husband was such an asshole, and then like walked off. I don't know. I feel like they're going to show up again in some capacity. I don't know which capacity, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I have no idea where they're going. So again, this is the book I know the absolute least about. And all the things I know are getting like taken care of pretty quickly.
Oh my God. I'm just opening the Deathly Hallows book to like look at the chapter names again. And the title page has a picture of Hedwig in the cage. And I'm like, why?
They just want to twist the knife.
Hedwig, we hardly knew ye.
Oh yeah. Now I gotta find this. Oh, yeah, gross.
She was so sassy and never took Harry's crap.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Aw. Boo.
Yes. And so thus concludes this week's episode of Rambling Raven Puffs. You know, tune in next time and we'll get into chapters 5 and 6. Fallen Warrior and the Ghoul in Pajamas.
Okay, that title stresses me out.
Who do you think it is?
Better not be Hagrid. But it might be.
Alrighty. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. that was the Sophia Mayer Studios podcast.